Happy Sabbath, brothers and sisters. It's good to be here today. It's good to be able to fellowship with the blessing of your presence, your prayers, your thoughts, your hope, your faith, and love. That helps us all to do the same, to hope, to have faith, to love. Everything we do out of these before Elohim in the congregation edifies each one of us to do the same. So thank you for your encouragement. Thank you for encouraging each other. It's just a blessing for us all, and maybe a blessing for extended families and everyone that we touch, as we're all touching to be a light, so the darkness will flee from us in the name of the Sovereign Son Yeshua, the Son of Elohim. As everything was going on, the readings, the prayers, the singing, I was just thinking through, looking through the scriptures while trying to listen to everything else that was being done. I was just trying to settle my heart and mind to continue the book of Acts, chapter 15, verses 6 through 11. And without going through everything that we went through, because we saw how what was being asked by the Pharisaic sect was not according to the law and the prophet, but was just the opinion of the Pharisaic sect, which believed to some degree or to another in Messiah, but they were not part of the congregation of the apostles. And that's why the scriptures said they were of the sect of Pharisees. As I may have mentioned before, all we need to do is look into history, especially the accounts of Josephus and other sources, to see how many different sects of Judaism there were back then, or different ideas of what constituted the faith, how much of it was there. So these Pharisees believed, just as even in some records, so that there were disciples of John that believed but were not part of the congregation of Elohim. They still were trying to follow John's directive in a strange way, in an unsound way, according to the records. So this is why here, this Pharisaic sect, which believed, was asking that the Gentiles were coming, the nations who are coming to faith, should be circumcised according to the law of Moses in their flesh, and also keep the law, not just the law, but the law of Moses. So we're going to continue with verse 11. Just things to add concerning the law of Moses. In Psalms 32, verse 9, I always talk about the bit and the bridle. This is where it's listed that we should not be as the stubborn horse or mule. Let me just quickly turn that passage, and I'll try to help make sense of why I'm saying that. Yes, Psalms 32, verse 9. It starts off saying, and that's interesting for context. Verse 1 says, "Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom the Eternal imputes not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile." So already David here is speaking of conditions that don't exist in through the law of Moses. You don't just have your sins forgiven and your transgressions forgiven and your sins covered. You could have some sins covered, but the reason he could say that is because through the covenant of salt, which Elohim made to him early on, when he wanted to build, when he spoke of building a temple, and Elohim said no, but that your son would build it, and then Elohim made a covenant of salt with him, as Elohim said that his sins would be forgiven in a way that was not a provision in the law of Moses. In the law of Moses, again, the sin that David did to commit adultery, to have an innocent, faithful man murdered, was a great sin, and there was nothing in the law of Moses that could afford that. It is because Elohim had made the covenant of salt with him That's why his life was spared. I never mentioned too much why Elohim made this covenant of salt with it. Why would he do that? It's because Elohim will not forget our good works. While everyone in Israel stayed at home, apart from the military, David and his men went out to defend the nation. And again, apart from the help of Elohim, David was putting his life on the line every time. So doesn't such people deserve a greater grace, would you say? Yes, obviously. They deserve greater slack because they're putting their life on the line for everyone in the name of the Eternal. And so that's why he said, "You are my servant." And that's why he allowed David to have such grace and mercy, because of the sacrifices that David made day in and day out. And I don't mean sacrifices of animals, but sacrificing, putting his life on the line for the people. That's why David was found worthy. Maybe worthy is not the word, but that the love of Elohim was extended to him in that way that he could have forgiveness. So David could say here indeed, in Psalms 32 verses 1 and 2, "Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered," because that covenant of salt allowed for that. "Blessed is the man unto whom the Eternal imputes not iniquity," does not charge. He doesn't hold it against him, does not charge, right? The verse in question is, the verse here is, verse 8 says, of Psalms 32, "I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you shall go. I will guide you with my eye." What is the eye of the Eternal? The spirit of Elohim, as we read several months ago when we were doing the book of Revelation. We understand the eyes are a reference, or is an allegory of the spirit of Elohim. Or the seven eyes are allegorical of the seven spirits of Elohim, which these were seven angels. But his eye here is his spirit. He will guide you with the spirit, not with Torah. He says, "I will instruct you with and teach you in the way you shall go. I will guide you with mine eye." And somewhere in one of the prophecies says, you will hear a word says, go walk this way, walk ye in it. That's the guidance of the spirit rather than Torah. And bear with me as I'm saying this, because don't worry, I'll explain it. So it says, and it says, "Be ye not as the horse or as a mule, which have no understanding, whose mouth must be held in with bit and bridle, lest they come near you." You see, so he's contrasting. So first he talks about the forgiveness that comes when Elohim does not impute sin. A forgiveness that comes by the covenant of salt, not by the law of Moses. There's no such provision, again, in the law of Moses for the forgiveness of adultery and murder. None. It's death. All right? So then he goes in verse 8, "I will instruct you." I will instruct you. And then he says, "Don't be stubborn as the horse and brittle." "I will instruct you" is the spirit, right? "Be not as the horse or the mule, which hath no understanding, whose mouth must be held in bit and brittle." Understanding is, remember, faith. Faith is right understanding. Faith, whose mouth must be held with bit and brittle. A control. Something that's, you know, you're being controlled against your will. It's something you're not doing it through understanding. You're not doing it through faith. And when I say you, I don't mean those of us on the line. That's just my manner of speaking. So when a person like doesn't commit adultery because they're afraid they're going to suffer some consequence, that's not doing it out of faith. That's doing it out of bit and bridle, out of fear of death. While the person who does it out of faith believes in not committing adultery. They have, and they hate committing adultery. They understand it for the death and injustice that it is. They want nothing to do with it. So a person who obeys Elohim's commands does not obey it in the new covenant by law. They obey it by faith. It means they're not doing out of fear of anything. That's the difference in the new covenant. The law there, when it speaks of the law, it's the controls. It's the, if you do this wrong, this is going to happen. And so a lot of people, because of their ways, as the word says, the law came because of sin. People were not out of their own hearts and faith and understanding doing what's right. they had to be told what to do, and with the threat of consequences, of punishment, of death, and death in various cruel ways, or another, and I dare say cruel, stoning, burning, you know, impaling. It was intended to instill fear, because the people were so hard at that time. Why were they so hard? Because of demonic influence. When we read the accounts of Noah in the ancient, in the books of Jubilees, in the book of Enoch, it explains all of those things. What happened to mankind? How Noah, after the flood, he started to see the influence of demons over his sons and his son's sons. And so he prayed to Elohim that he would protect them and spare them from the demons, and that they should not have authority over the righteous. It's a very moving and interesting account of what Noah was dealing with earlier. But mankind in general were driven away by demonic influence. They became beast-like. And this is after the flood, you understand? He had destroyed them because they were completely corrupted in so many ways, including the animal life. But as far as people, even after the flood, they became corrupt by the influence of demonic influence. And of course, their own stubbornness. But the demons accelerated the evil. And they were devouring each other, literally destroying each other. They had no heart, no mercy, nothing, no understanding. They became as brute beasts. But Elohim, in his grace, sent Abraham, who had a right mind. And he being a Shemite and his descendants, he established through them a covenant and a law to be a light to the rest of mankind. So that he gave them the law because they were so stubborn, they could not understand. Very few could understand except the prophets like Abraham and the other elders. So that's why the law with the administration or the ministration of death was given, to mitigate, to minimize death by threat of punishment. And if you do this, you're not just going to get away. You're going to be punished. And so people calmed down. And centuries upon centuries until the time of Messiah, people became more reasonable, especially under Roman rule. For those of us who don't know, you could learn of this from the book of the Maccabees. It speaks about how the Israelites made a pact with the Romans. Why did they make a pact with the Romans? Because the Romans were known, of all the other nations, were the most just nation on earth. As my daughter would often say, they abhorred the sacrifice of any person. They wanted to put law on the land. This was the work of Elohim, not of man. People don't understand that. Every single government that came, all the four governments, empires that came over the earth, were established by Elohim to rule the earth, to keep the peace. That's what it was all about. And King Nebuchadnezzar was the first one, also exemplified by a statue, a huge statue with gold on top. And King Nebuchadnezzar of the Babylonians was the first government, then the Medo-Persians, then Greece, lastly Rome. And Rome was that last empire that Elohim established, put on the earth to govern the earth, to keep the peace. And hence the ancient term Pax Romana. So that calmed the world down. And by then, at the right time, Messiah came to earth to teach people to reinstill faith, not just in the few, but in the many. In as many, many, for the just shall live by faith, by right understanding, which causes them to trust Elohim. Right understanding that serves as the substance hope for, the evidence of things not seen, by the word of Elohim. And so they serve Elohim through faith, not through fear of punishment. All of Paul's teachings regarding when he speaks about the law of this, that's what it's talking about. It's not saying that we should not keep the commandments of Elohim. Although the word law and commandments are used interchangeably throughout the scriptures, but there is a distinction. Elohim can tell you, keep the Sabbath day holy, and not say to you, or else you will be put to death by stoning, as he did in Exodus chapter 20. He just says, don't do it. There was no penalty. Later on, when people transgress, he declared the penalty, that a person who breaks the Sabbath is to be stoned to death, right? So So we keep the commandments of Elohim by grace, by faith, by right understanding, with a right disposition, not with bit and bridle, not with some sort of thing, a piece of control in our mouth and harnesses to say, to force us to turn there, with, because he has sent forth his spirit. I will guide you with mine eye. The spirit of Elohim now will guide you. You're not going to do this because of fear. You're going to do it out of love. And people like David love the law of Elohim in every way. He was not doing it out of fear, neither Moses, but in general, the people were. And it became corrupt, and it became something that was being handled. So keep Psalms 32. Keep that in mind. Keep the context. Blessed is he whose transgressions are forgiven. And the whole thing, what it means. So keeping the law sometimes can loosely be said to mean just keep his commandments. And it's okay. It's fine. But we have to make sure we understand when Paul is saying things that seem to be contrary to the law, he's not talking about obeying the commandments, but he's talking about law in the sense of a control against your will. Those who have the Spirit don't serve Elohim by a control. They serve Elohim in spirit and in truth, in hope, faith, and love. So that's what we need to keep in mind. And that's why in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, then we'll never get confused and never think the Bible is contrary. No, it's not. It's just the way it uses words. And the Bible is set up that way so that those who don't love the truth will fall into error because they don't want the truth. The Bible is cleverly, wisely written in such a way so that only the righteous in heart will dig for the treasures that are in it. But those who are careless will fall in the parables, will fail to recognize the parables, will fail to recognize the allegories, will definitely not recognize the lying pen of the scribe that's there. All of these things, Elohim allowed the Bible to be written in such a way so that only the righteous, only those who really want to do well, will understand it. So 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 7 to 11 says, but if the ministry of death, written and engraved in stones, was glorious, so that the children of Israel could not steadfastly behold the face of Moses for the glory of his countenance, which glory was to be done away, how shall not the ministration of the Spirit be more glorious? For if the ministration of condemnation have glory or be glory, much more does the ministration of righteousness exceed in glory. For even that which was made glorious had no glory in this respect, by reason of the glory that excelled. For if that which is done away was glorious, much more that which remains glorious. Okay, so what is Paul saying? Paul is about the ministration of death. Again, the ministration of death, we just can't make it up. We have to look through the scriptures to see what was going on. When you look through Moses and the law, what was Elohim doing through Moses? He was minimizing death. It may seem cruel with some of the things you read in the Tanakh and in the Old Testament, but it really wasn't comparing to how the world was living. The rest of the world was idolatrous, burning their children, sacrificing their children, some of them eating their children, some of them using each other's wives. It was just violence. Some of them believed in taking advantage of others. That was their norm. Okay, so it was their norm to steal. It was their norm to conquer the poor, to rob the poor. It's unbelievable how the world was. So when we understand how the world was, you can see indeed that this ministration of death was glorious. Ministration of death means it manages death. It's controlling death so people don't destroy themselves. That's what that was about. And it was glorious. And it was being ministered through Moses and up until John the Baptist, when Messiah came, the ministration of the Spirit, the ministration of Elohim's eye, that David's poem, I will guide you with my eye. And that's the Spirit in us, causing us to love Elohim, causing us to understand and believe and love his commandments. When we understand and believe His commandments, there's no room for sin in our lives. We don't want sin, any type of sin. It doesn't become problematic. And that's how we judge ourselves. Ask ourselves, do we struggle with sins? Do we struggle with fornication? Do we struggle with lust? Do we struggle with violence? As long as we struggle with these things, we have not put to death the things of the world. We're still in a way being controlled by bit and bridle. We're still putting ourselves in under the law, rather being governed by the Spirit of Elohim, where we understand, why would I want to commit fornication? That is an evil thing. Why would I want to do that to someone else's daughter, to someone else's sister? Why? I would not want that done to any member of my family. Why would I do such a thing? It's unrighteous. See, that's how the mind that is governed by the Spirit thinks. We don't think of stealing. How could I think of stealing what's not mine? He or she worked hard for whatever he or she has. How could I even think of taking away what was? Rather, we think of it in this way. May Elohim bless you evermore to have more and more abundantly. Sometimes the host would say, I'm doing well, but I hope you're doing even better than I am. That's how the Spirit-governed mind is. We're far from thinking of things like adultery and stealing and being covetous. We don't think like that because the Spirit of Elohim governs our hearts. Now, what happens if we're thinking like that? Ask and it shall be given to you. It's not trying to obey the commandments with our own fleshy minds like rabbinical thinking would make us do. That's not how it works. You have to ask Elohim, I don't want this sin in my life. Please help me. I want to do what's right in your life. I want to have a pure heart. So that the sister prayed and that we should have a pure heart, right? Create in me a clean heart, O Elohim, and renew a right spirit, a right eye in me. Oh, if your eye be single, right? Somewhere I believe it's in one of the epistles speaks about being single, have a single eye or single-mindedness. Our souls should not be conflicted, where we desire to do something that's wrong, but then our consciences are telling us no. And the only reason that's stopping is fear of some consequence. No, that's not the way of Elohim. We are to live, obey the commandments by faith, by right understanding. I think I've said enough about that. There's more. If you want to look into this more, let's see there's Galatians chapter 3, verse 24, which speaks of the law being as a schoolmaster. What does a schoolmaster does? Make sure all the students are in order, are obedient and doing. We don't need a schoolmaster. We want to obey all of Elohim's commandments, all the commandments in doing good, the good things that we're supposed to do. We want to obey all of them, but out of right understanding, out of faith, and out of love, not out of bit and brittle, not out of law in the sense of, if you don't, you'll die. I mean, the new covenant is not about if you don't, you will die. Rather, it's about the ministration of the Spirit and of righteousness. Of the Spirit and of righteousness. We want to do what's right by the Spirit. All right, let's continue as much as I can here from verse 11. Acts chapter 15, verse 11. But we believe that through the grace of the sovereign Yeshua, we shall be saved even as they. I've already described all this. That's what it is. It's by the grace. And grace doesn't just mean forgiveness. Grace means favor. It's an unmerited favor. And that unmerited favor can imply many things, can include many things. Yes, it includes forgiveness, but it also includes power to overcome. And that's grace in context of sin. But grace is also the receiving of the gifts of the Spirit, the ability to bear the fruit of the Spirit, the grace of the fellowship of the Spirit. All of these are graces. So let us not think that grace only mean unmerited forgiveness. Forgiveness is only part of it. So how we live? Yes, we are saved by grace, by the forgiveness of Elohim, by the empowerment of Elohim, by the fellowship of the Spirit, by the gifts of the Spirit, by the fruit of the Spirit, and every other good gift that comes from Elohim. That's how we're saved. That's what it means by we're saved by grace and not by law. The grace enables us to keep the law. Let's move on. Then in verse 12, then all the multitude kept silence and gave audience to Barnabas and Paul, declaring what miracles and wonders Elohim had done among the Gentiles by them. Again, examples of this grace. This grace, it's the things that Elohim had done. Verse 13, after they had held their peace, James answered, saying, men and brethren, hearken unto me. Simeon hath declared how Elohim at the first did visit the Gentiles to take out them a people for his name. And to this agree the words of the prophets, as it is written, after this I will return and will build again the tabernacle of David, which is fallen down, and I will build again the ruins thereof, and I will set it up, that the residue of men might seek after the eternal, and all the Gentiles upon whom my name is called, saith the eternal, who doeth these things. Now, briefly, we see here the example of the participation of the congregation. Even though this is the congregation of the saints, not the general assembly, this is the congregation of the saints, the leaders that are all filled with the Spirit of Elohim. This is not the general congregation as we saw in verse 2. There, the general congregation saw the confusion and told Paul and Barnabas to go to Jerusalem. So now we're seeing an assembly of, for lack of better words, the leaders, the main servants of the congregations in Judea and among the Gentiles. So they gave testimony. Peter assisted with establishing affirming the right faith or the right understanding, explaining how Elohim, through him, saved the Gentiles, were saving Gentiles. Then Barnabas and Paul gave testimony to the Elohim saving the Gentiles, right? How he saved the Gentiles. And the wonders that Elohim did for the Gentiles. And Elohim does nothing in vain. If he does wonders for the Gentiles, that means he wants to save them. So he gave testimony. And now James, who's James? James was, according to what's understood, the brother, one of the brothers of Yeshua. James was not the apostle James. James here is the bishop of the Jerusalem congregation. He's the head servant of the congregations in Jerusalem, which the apostles established through Messiah as the head of the congregations in Jerusalem, under the leadership of the apostles. Let's make sure we understand that. Now, what was his job? Notice how he's summarizing what has happened. He waited till they were all done. And after they held their peace. So when they were all done speaking, he summarized what Peter said and how the prophets agree with what Peter said, that Elohim would set up the tabernacle of David and would draw the Gentiles after him, the rest of mankind, and the Gentiles would follow him, save the who doeth all these things. So that's what he did. So you could see the job of the leader is not to control, but there as an administrator, because administration is part of the job of the bishop, you coordinate things. He's coordinating everything that was said here in their meeting. So verse 18, he says, known unto Elohim are all of his works from the beginning of the world. Big words here. As I said, he declares the end from the beginning. He already knows. He knows in advance everything that's going to happen. And that's how he saves in advance. Wherefore, my sentences, since my judgment is that we trouble not them which from among the Gentiles are turned to Elohim, but that we write unto them that they abstain from pollutions of idols and from fornication and from things strangled and from blood. That's verse 20. Now, that's what he wants them to write down for them. These things. This is my judgment. In response to, they must be circumcised according to the law of Moses, and that they must keep the law of Moses. That means the administration of death. Have those laws that if you commit adultery, you are to die. That's what that's about. So he says, write to them that they abstain from what? Pollutions of idols. They are no longer idolaters. They believe in Elohim, but they have to be told, don't involve themselves at all. The things that are offered to idols, the pollutions of all types of idols, stay away from them. And from fornication, because these things were normal in those societies. So these are things that the apostles are making sure by the Spirit that they understand. Make sure, because the influence among the nations was great, the sinfulness, idolatry, fornication, violence. They're in an environment that's really not conducive to right living. So they wrote to them these things. Stay away from the idols. Stay away from fornication and from things strangled and from blood. That's all we want to write to them. Now, regarding Moses, verse 21, he says, "For Moses of old time have in every city them that preach him, being read in the synagogues every Sabbath day." Let me explain this, which you probably understand, and then we'll end with it. And he's saying this by the Spirit. I want you to understand. He's led by the Spirit. He's not doing this, you know, from any other source. It's by the Spirit of him is guiding him what he is to tell them, to include in this letter. So then he explains why. For means because, right? For. This is the reason. What's the reason? Moses, from old time, in every city, have them that preach him, being read in the synagogues every Sabbath day. Okay? So they understand that the law, they're going to hear the law of Moses. We don't need to put this pressure on them. They're going to hear the law of Moses read in the synagogues. And of course, the Spirit of Elohim will guide them in understanding all truth when they hear these things. They will know what is new covenant. They will know what is not new covenant, if you understand what I'm saying. So it's the ministration of the Spirit. So they will hear the law of Moses, just like you and I do. When we read the Bible, we read about all sorts of things. We read about burning people. We read about stoning people. We read about impaling people, all sorts of things as punishment, right? But the Spirit of Elohim, by the new covenant, all these things we understand are not things for us. That was under the administration of death. We are in the ministration of life now. For Moses will have them. So let's end here. So we saw that, talked about that the law is a general word. Sometimes it can mean the commandments of Elohim, like thou shalt not kill, you know, the Ten Commandments and other such commandments of righteousness. But oftentimes it can mean the entire sets of law, which is the ministration of the law according to Moses, which is the ministration of death, right? Or ministration of condemnation. But then the law, we have to understand, sometimes is just talking about the commandments. We are to obey the commandments of Elohim, all the ten. Keep the Sabbath, keep ourselves pure, keep the holy days, and above all, love Elohim with all our hearts, all our soul, all our mind, and to love our neighbor. We must keep all these things, but we do not exercise the ministration of death. That part about stoning and all of that, we don't get ourselves involved with that. We don't do those things. And we also saw that at the end result, the apostles gave record of what Elohim did, starting with Peter, talking about how Elohim helped the Gentiles, started to save the Gentiles through him. And Paul and Barnabas gave testimony of all the wonders Elohim did. And then we saw James summarizing everything and making the administrative decision. That's his job, all right? Like, for instance, Moses established the priests, right? But Moses would not, once he did, the job of the priest, Moses doesn't touch. So likewise, the apostles established the bishops, but the bishops have their own particular responsibility that, unless there's no bishop, once there's a bishop there, it's the bishop's responsibility to do the summary. And the Spirit used that bishop to make the final decision. And of course, the Spirit of Elohim is already in the apostles, and they all agree by the Spirit to do this one thing. So we stop here, dear brethren, and I'll take your comments, questions.